On the last page of a letter to the congregation in Ephesus, Paul writes, "Finally, be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power." And Paul is not just filling up the end of his letter with religious niceties. When he writes the next sentence, "Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes," Paul really expects them to actually do something, for us to do something with that. When Paul says, "For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms," Paul is talking about a real war that we are really in, whether we admit it or not. A preacher in an Indiana church did not believe in the paranormal as a real thing. So when he had a chance to go see a self-proclaimed medium nearby, he and a couple guys who were part of his church went to see her. This lady claimed she could speak with the dead. And the preacher knew that was a hoax, but out of curiosity and out of cynicism, he decided to go have a look. There were about 100 people there in the room at the beginning of the program, and the medium gave this instructions to those who were in the room. She said, "I want each of you to write your name on a piece of paper. I want you to write the name of a dead person that you'd like to talk to, and then write three questions that you would like to ask." So Bob Brazil, the preacher, wrote his name on a piece of paper, and then he wrote the name Laura John Dahl, who was his grandmother who had died in 1940. And for the questions, he wrote, "Are you aware of the cause of your death," which happened to be cancer of the liver? And then he wrote, "Are you aware of the cause of death of your daughter," which also happened to be liver cancer? And he said, "Are you aware of where your son JB was when he died?" JB had died in a California prison. The preacher said he had never seen the woman before. She was up on the stage. She blindfolded herself. She was handed the basket with all the papers from the room in it. She reached in and pulled out his piece of paper. She held it for a moment, and then she said, "Is there a Bob Brazil here?" And he said his name is never pronounced correctly, yet she did. She said, "Bob Brazil?" He said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "I have someone here for you, Laura John Dahl. I believe she is your grandmother. Is that correct?" "Yes, ma'am." The medium said, "She is aware of her cause of death, which was cancer of the liver, although other organs were involved. And she is aware of the cause of death of her daughter, Bess?" "Yes, ma'am." "Also cancer of the liver. And she is deeply grieved that her son, JB, died in prison." Bob Brazil said he realized right then that he was at a place where he should not be. He said, "I have never felt the power and presence of Satan so awesome as at that moment, and I left as quickly as I could, promising the Lord that I would never knowingly get involved with anything like that ever again." We are in a war. I have friends who think that I live in la-la land because I believe in an invisible world all around us, filled with beings who know things and do things and want things. I have other friends who believe with me that there is indeed such an unseen world, but they think that the spiritual beings that are all around us that we can't see are all on our side, that they're there to lead us, to help us, to add positive energy to our lives, spirit guides, they call them. And then I have some friends who are scared to death of anything supernatural. Anything supernatural beings, you talk about that, and they'll spend enormous energy trying to protect themselves from the demons that they see behind every tree. Those friends are the guys who say, "When in doubt, cast it out." But a more biblical view of all of that would go something like this. God existed when nothing else did. He was it. And then he decided to make stuff. And he made everything, including invisible beings that would do his will. We call them angels, messengers, servants of God. But apparently one of those beings decided that he wanted to be God, which is as silly as if you were making little people out of Play-Doh and one of them challenged you to a fight. But this angel decided he was going to take over heaven, and he convinced other little Plato beings to rebel with him. And the God who created all of them saw that and flicked them out of heaven's window with his finger. The evil one, then realizing that that didn't go so well and this wasn't going to be easy, decided he would take over the thing that God loved the most, which was a planet filled with God's children. Apparently, he was thinking that if he held the children hostage, he could leverage that for a shot at taking God's spot in the future. And God loved the taken captive children so much that he put together a daring rescue plan where he himself would come down to this planet as a person and offer to trade himself for all of us. When that happened, the evil one couldn't believe his luck. Yes, yes, I'll take that trade. He figured he could kill the creator and become God himself. But his victory celebration was cut short when on Easter Sunday morning, God, whom the evil one had killed, got up and said, no, that didn't work. At which point, the evil one realized he was never going to sit in God's seat, ever. He would never be king of the universe. He lost. And like all bad losers, he decided to implement a scorched earth policy. Literally, if he could not have it, he would at least ruin it for God. And this creature, destined for hell, and knowing it, has spent the last 2,000 years doing everything he can to trick people into ignoring, distrusting, hating God. He can't win, so in furious anger, he is trying to take us all down with him. And he has beings in the invisible world that he controls, that he forces to do his will, and they do that. And that, says Paul, that is who we're at war with. The devil is not cute. The devil does not have horns or a pitchfork or a tail. The devil is a rapist. He is a cannibal. He is a serial killer with no conscience. He has no friends. He's got no love. He never smiles. He never does anything good, ever. He's dark. The only language he speaks is lie. And he hates you. He hates you. He hates you. He despises you. He can't stand me. God sickens him. And he wants us all to die in horribly ugly ways. Jesus told us about him, and he said, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. Jesus said, on the other hand, I have come to give you life. Life to the max. So when Paul is writing to Christians living in Ephesus, he says, therefore, put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground. And after you've done everything, stand. Paul is trying to prepare us, trying to prepare you, because the enemy we fight is real and invisible and insane. There is a war going on between God and the evil one. Now, God is overwhelmingly bigger and stronger than his opponents. He made his opponents. But they are fighting over us. They are fighting with us. They are fighting through us. Somebody said, every day is election day. Every day is election day. God votes for you. Satan votes against you. You cast the deciding vote. That's happening all around us every day, all day long in your life. That's what's happening. So Paul tells us to put on the following items of war gear so that after everything's done, we will still be standing. And I sure hope you get the importance of what Paul is saying on this last page. Paul is not saying, let me give you the armor of God sermon now so that someday, somewhere in Bible school, your kids can cut out little swords and shields. He was saying, put it on, or the evil one will kill you. Put this on. You're standing in the middle of a war zone. Put this on. At a funeral I was at, everyone in the room was challenged to realize that one day we are each going to be the person that everybody else comes to say nice things about. It is going to be our turn. We will be in that room because we will be in the casket. So be prepared, because on that day, nothing else you did in life will matter. It won't matter like what you did with Paul's teaching here on page 6 about the war we're in, the war you're in, whether or not you choose to put on the full armor of God so that you can stand. One of my favorite jokes ever, I know I use it too much, but I got to tell it one more time. One of my favorite jokes ever is about the guy who came across the Cherokee tribe one day, and the chief greeted him and said, how? And the man said, how? And the chief said, how? And the man said, how? And the chief said, wow, I didn't know you could speak Cherokee. And the man said, well, it's actually pretty easy when you know how. Dealing with demons, engaging in spiritual warfare, I won't say that it's easy, but it's doable if you know how. And Paul says, the secret to being strong in the Lord and in his mighty power is by dressing right. Here's how we need to prepare in order to survive the attacks of the evil one that will come your way today. In Ephesians 6:14, Paul says, stand firm then, with the belt of truth buckled around your waist, with the breastplate of righteousness in place, and with your feet fitted with the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. Paul takes us some of the normal riot gear that soldiers in the Roman army wore back then, and he turns it into spiritual gear. And whether you're a fan of Gladiator or Braveheart or Saving Private Ryan or the Unit, people heading into battle usually always try to cover themselves in fairly similar ways. They often have a belt around their waist or around their chest, often used to carry things that they're going to need in battle, like, Batman's utility belt, Tim Taylor's tool belt, David's belly bag with five smooth stones in it. Paul says Christians need to wrap themselves with the truth. The belt that we need is truth. We need to know the truth. One of the things that made my heart ache at camp this week was teenagers asking questions about their friends. Their friends who have absolutely no connection or interest in Jesus. And the kids at camp know Jesus. And they know that he said, I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. We actually sing a song about that at campfire sometimes. We like that song. But then Jesus says after that, he says, I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. Nobody gets to the Father except through me. And the kids at camp are saying, that's not fair. My friends don't know. They're nice people. They're good people. But they've seen bad examples of Christianity. And I love them. Why can't God just let them in? They're nice people. The kids say, why would God, what kind of God would banish my friends whom I love to eternal punishment? Which isn't really the question. The real question is, what kind of judge would pronounce a death sentence and then step down off the bench and trade places with the person he just sentenced to death? Like, probably only a judge who really, really loved the person that he just condemned, right? Like the person who deserves to die maybe is the judge's son or the judge's daughter getting sentenced, and the judge would rather die himself than watch his child be executed. So the thing that the staff wrestled with this week is, how do we get campers to see the truth? That God's not mean. Are you kidding me? The fact that any of us can go to heaven, any of us, that we have a chance. The fact that God has arranged a way of escape, that he's trying to get all of us out as fast as best he can, that he loves our friends more than we love our friends. How do we get our kids to see that? The fact that our defiance of what we know is right, when we choose to do wrong, makes us criminal before God, makes us terminal, that we're going to die. Those are true things. That's the truth. But U.S. teenagers have been tricked by the evil one into thinking good people are good and God is bad for judging us. Like always, the liar questions what God says, and then he denies what God says, and then he reverses what God says, and somehow God, who is trying to save us from what we deserve, turns out in people's minds to be the bad guy. To deal with demonic attacks in life, we need to have wrapped ourselves with truth. In order to not get tricked into wrong thinking, wrong behavior, wrong attitudes, we need to wrap our teenagers with truth. A belt of truth is vital in this war, which is why we invest time and money and life in Mountain View, so that our kids will have a chance to hear scripture and see people who follow Jesus well and make decisions about how they're going to live the rest of their lives, which is why we have a youth group here, which is why we offer classes for Willowbrook kids, which is why we have groups that get together to study and listen and discuss God's word, which is why we're here. Our church is here to help people know the truth about God, seen through Jesus. Did you hear about the guy who said he's going to write the story of how his life should have gone? He's going to tell about all the things that he should have done. He's going to call it an autobiography. Autobiography. But even better is if we would get it right from the very beginning. We need a belt of truth around us. And we need a breastplate of righteousness, something to protect us from getting smashed to smithereens, like a flak jacket, or a catcher's chest protector, or a Lancelot suit of armor. I saw a guy on Disney's channel recently selling a Kevlar vest to SWAT teams. He said his vest was the best vest out there. And to demonstrate the value of his vest, to show the effectiveness of what he was selling, at the end of his presentation to this SWAT team, he shot himself in the chest. He put on the vest, he pointed the gun at his heart, 44 Magnum, and pulled the trigger. Before he did that, he said, "This is the part I don't really like." Bang! He knocked himself over. And then he slowly climbed to his feet. And he said, "Well, worked again." Paul says if we're going to take spiritual hits in life and still get up, we need a flak jacket of righteousness. And he's not talking about you living life so well that you never mess up, that you're righteous. Now, it's true, with Jesus training us, we can get better and better as we go, but that ain't it. Your righteousness, your goodness, your level of living life like it should be always has holes in it. My wife has a couple of pot holders at home that have holes in them so that you can hang them on a hook so that they'll be right there at the oven when you need them. Are you tracking with me? Pot holders, which you grab burning hot pans with, that have holes in them. And the reason I know all this is because once Linda made a bad noise in the kitchen, like bad, and I ran in to see what was happening, Her finger had gone through the hole where you're supposed to hang it. If you're thinking Paul is talking about you need a breastplate of righteousness, of your righteousness, you're going to be making some terrible noises in your kitchen someday. Because your righteousness, your spouse's righteousness, your preacher's righteousness, everybody's righteousness has holes in it. But at our baptism, according to Paul in Galatians 3, or in Romans 6, or in Colossians 2, or in 2 Corinthians 5, at our baptism we put on Christ. We get to wear his righteousness, his perfect righteousness, his unholy righteousness, if you know what I mean. And when the evil one attacks and says, you call yourself a Christian and you just did that? Or when the evil one says, how real can your connection with God be if that's the best you got? We can say, you're right. You're right. I'm nothing. I'm not really good yet, but Jesus is great and I'm with him. And with the breastplate of righteousness, we can take those hits and we can get up again. Paul also says we need to have our feet fitted with readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. Shoes are important. Hockey players sharpen their blades so they won't lose an edge. Football players are always changing their cleats depending on how muddy or cold the field is. George Washington soldiers at Valley Forge wrapped their feet in ripped up shirts because that was the best they had. Golfers always take two pairs of shoes with them in case they get a hole in one. Paul said, if we're going to stand up to the demonic warfare, we need to be ready at all times. Ready for what? To go and do what? What are we supposed to be ready for? To go do? To make disciples? To tell others the good news? That's it? One teenager asked this week, do we really have to tell other people about Jesus? I mean, it's hard. It can be awkward. They might not take it well. It'll change things. Do we really have to? And to his credit, the guy teaching the class said to her, yes. Yes, we should always be looking for chances. Yes, we should be trying to create conversations. Yes, we should always be picking up on what people around us are laying down. The car my son was driving in last week had a flat. A tire went flat. He could not get the tire off. One of his friends was there. His friend tried to help him. They could not get the tire off. So his friend called AAA to come take care of that for him. Meanwhile, I came over and gave Jess a different car so that he could head off to camp. I stayed there with Jess's friend. We stayed and waited for the AAA guy to show up. He got there. He got the tire off. He only needed to jack it up very high, lay under it, and swing a sledge as hard as he could 12 times, but he got it off. I thank Jess's friend for staying and helping. Jess's friend is a really good guy, and we love him a lot, and we desperately want him to know Jesus like we do, and he knows that. He makes jokes about it. When I said, I'm so glad that he would stay and help, he said, oh, I'm glad to, John. You know, I'm always trying to do nice things for your family, trying to slide right into heaven, right there on your coattails. And he laughed. And I said, oh, dude, that is exactly the right plan, but you got the wrong coattails. Paul says, come on, folks, this matters. People are not digging life like they could if Jesus was leading them through it. And someday, they're all going to die. And if they don't have him then, then they'll wish you had tried harder to tell them. Shoes on, Paul says, ready to go, peacefully, lovingly, convincingly go. Verse 16 says, in addition to this, take up the shield of faith with which you can extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. Take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. I'll go faster here. Does your faith shield you when you get shot at? Do you have confidence in God? Do you have such confidence in God that when your enemies try to get you to doubt God, to doubt his truth, to doubt his goodness, it just bounces off you? Like a flaming arrow that says, God can't find you the right person. Just sleep with whoever's next. Like the flaming arrow that says, he can't provide for your family on that much. Take a little extra on the side. Like the flaming arrow that says, you're not smart enough, good enough, talented enough. You're not connected enough. You're not loved enough. You're not clean enough to make a difference in the world. There's no way your life could change anything for anybody. We need a shield, a faith. How about a helmet of salvation? Do you got that? Do you have a helmet of salvation? Football players wear helmets. Hockey players, baseball players wear helmets. Police wear helmets. Evil Knievel wears helmets. Skydivers wear helmets. Although I don't really get that. When a helmet comes into play for them, I mean, wouldn't they have bigger issues there? Like the bumper sticker that says, if at first you don't succeed, skydiving's not for you. But helmets are for our protection. We put on God's salvation for our protection. Our relationship with him is what protects us from those who are trying to hurt us. And the sword of the Spirit, the word of the Lord, we wield that like Inigo Montoya wielded his sword. Because the Bible is the one thing that can cut through every deception that we face. Everything that we get confused about, everything that our friends get confused about. The word of God is the sword that will cut through. And in the end, all we face is deception. That's all they got. The evil one can't win, and he knows he loses. In 1 John 4, it says, "You, dear children, are from God. You have overcome them, because the one who is in you is greater than the one who is in the world." It's a done deal. So all he's got left is deceit. He can try to make us think wrong or act wrong or bet wrong. And he's really good at deceit, making people believe that he's trying to help them when really he's trying to kill them, tricking people into thinking they're safe to do some stuff with him his way, when he knows that won't work, and he can't wait for it to blow up. Spiritual warfare, I still think one of the best analogies for spiritual warfare of what the evil one does is like a vicious dog that's chained up in a yard. A vicious dog that's ferocious and it's confined by its chain, and as long as you don't go where the dog can't get, you know you're totally safe. The problem is, the evil one is like that dog, only he's able to think and plot and deceive. And you know how chained dogs will go as far as the chain will go, and then they'll just walk in circles over and over and over trying to break free, and they'll wear out the grass in a circle at the outer limit of their chain, so you always know, don't step inside that groove path, because if you do, the dog can reach you. So the evil one does the same thing to us, vicious chained up dog seeking to devour us, and lots of people think he doesn't even exist. So they just walk right into the middle of a circle, and he rips them up, and their life is terrible, and they die. But some people are smarter than that, and they know that he's dangerous, so they don't go inside that circle. But sometimes he gets us to think, oh, something in there looks interesting. Something looks like it would make life better for us if we had that, more enjoyable, if we had that. It may be a relationship with someone, or something our friends do, or something we'd like to own. Oh, if we only had that. But it's inside the dog's circle. So we decide in the end, because we're smart, I'm not going to go for it. But here's what the evil one does. He walks around and around and around and around on his chain, and he wears a rut in the ground shorter than where he can go. And then when we see something we want, and it looks like it's outside his ring, we try to grab it. To our horror, discover that we are within his reach. Sometimes people who follow Jesus end up trapped and bleeding and enslaved and addicted and miserable and in hell, because they thought they could get what they wanted and not get caught. I was teaching a class this week about the Ten Commandments. I was teaching teenagers about the Ten Commandments. And in the middle of the class, I gave them a riddle. I said, okay, so there was this man who was afraid to go home because of the man in the mask. And they could ask any yes or no question, and I would answer it. So they tried to figure out, there was a man who was afraid to go home because of the man in the mask. And they guessed a lot of things. They guessed the guy's wearing a clown mask. Was it a scary mask? Was it a doctor's mask? Was it a COVID mask? Was it a burglar in his house that he was afraid? Was somebody trying to kill him and waiting for him in his home? Was it the devil? So after a lot of guessing, I told them the answer to the riddle. Do you want to know? Do you know why the man was afraid to go home because of the man in the mask? Because the man was a baseball player, and he was at third base, and he was afraid to go home because the catcher, who had a mask on, was waiting for him. So I explained that to the kids, and one of the girls, the one who guessed about the devil, was so disappointed. She said, oh, I thought this had something to do with what you're talking about. Which I know that some of you have thought in many times during my sermons. Does that really have anything to do with what we're talking about? And I told her, but it does. It so does, because the evil one will try to disguise himself as smart and good and helpful and God. But we really need to know the truth so that we can live life right. Paul says, therefore, put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground. And after you have done everything, stand. Paul says, put on the full armor of God. Constantly wear this uniform. Folks, you need to dress daily in this uniform. Paul says, finally, be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Think like Jesus does. Value what Jesus values. Act like Jesus acts. Trust him. You can do it if you know how.